Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Also to start taking the statistic again of how many times we go unavailable, because I hear about it, you guys should know about it to make informed decisions, and unavailable for how long and what kind of calls, because they're not always low acuity calls.
This is Jacqueline Rogers at the Board of County Commission meeting talking, Scambia Board of County Commission meeting, talking about EMS. This, the particular subject in this case had to do with transfers and what do they call it? It's interfacility transportation, which has been kind of a problem for the system. And there's been an effort to kind of keep that within Escambia County's control because there's a lot of money involved in it. Is that the best for patients? Does that, you know, if we take those high paying transfer calls, that helps support the EMS system itself, but it also puts a truck out of commission for use for other people. And if you have, you know, 15 trucks out and, you know, three of them are doing transfers, and then you get more than 12 calls come in, then, you know, or you're holding the wall at a hospital, which means that you cannot discharge your clients because there are no doctors to take care of them at the hospital. Anyway, it can cause problems and stresses in the system, which is, you know, understaffed to begin with, or at least, you know, maybe inadequately staffed to begin with. And she's just saying that, look, we need to have, I mean, by the way, she took time to praise them for this, and I agree, moving towards a sort of a client-centered rather than a profit-centered model in regards to that particular issue is important. But that, you know, let's get back to reporting. I think I've told you this before, that for the longest, you know, for a while, not all that long, but maybe for a year or two, I forget how long, I was getting the weekly director's report that had all of the, you know, how long are calls being held, or when are calls being held by Escambia County EMS. And then all of a sudden last January, that stopped being produced, like that data point. The report itself was being produced, but they basically said, you know, well, this data is misleading and we don't have good data, so we're not going to produce any data. And I'm like, cool. So now we just don't know. We have to go by what somebody hears on the scanner, you know, or what somebody tells somebody, which is not great. And I have been saying now for almost a year, we need to get back to reporting this. So I totally agree with Jacqueline about this, that we do need to report this, but I have a suggestion about how to do it. And she actually kind of said it, I think, in before even I could say it much on the air.
The other thing that I'm asking you to do is start timing response times from when the 911 call was, not from when they transferred it from one truck. That one couldn't make it, so then they transferred another. So those are requests.
Oh, that is a 100% yes. Because in case you're not familiar, at least the allegation, and I think the practice, has been, okay, so if the call for service comes in, hey, I need an ambulance, my son is sick, and it comes in at 7 p.m. If an EMS crew shows up at, let's say, 8 o'clock, John, you would say that's a?
That's a failure.
Well, yeah, but time-wise, that's how much time? 7 o'clock, and they show up at 8 o'clock? That's an hour. Not so. If you assign a truck at 7, or you, let's say it's called held, right? You say, we don't have any ambulances for you. And then a truck becomes free at 7:15. Well, now that's a 45-minute call. Is it a 45-minute call? No, it's an hour. It was an hour from the time that you called until a truck showed up, till somebody showed up. That's an hour. Well, we didn't have anybody assigned. That's not an hour. What?
Right.
Or, yeah, as would apparently also happen, you know, 7:15, you assign truck A, but then a higher acuity call comes in, and truck A gets sent somewhere else. And then you don't have a truck for 10 minutes, so it's 7:25. And then truck B becomes available, and you assign them, and it's 7:25. You know, well, now it's a 35-minute response time. Your time's looking better and better just because you're switching. No, none of that's good. So I completely agree with her. We need to resume reporting, and the reporting needs to be from the time the call comes in until the time that EMS is on. Not the time that Escambia County Fire Rescue is on, But the which often happens because they can respond sometimes when EMS does not respond. Yes. So time call in until. Okay. And the other thing is, and I've been really thinking about this a lot because this is an important issue for us. I've really been thinking about how to report this stuff because I'm very sympathetic to the problem of like the held call statistic is a very. It's not a great number because it doesn't tell you a lot. You know, if a call comes in and there's no truck available for you, that's not great. But what if it's for something incredibly minor? You know, a very low acuity, an alpha or a beta call, something that turns out to be no big deal. It doesn't really matter that much. But if a delta or an echo comes in, you know, that's a really significant call. Well, that becomes a problem. So really, the number I think they ought to be reporting is how long on average each day, and by average, you can go with your, you know, your mean average, which is take up all the wait times, you know, time the call comes in to the time a truck is on location and divide them by the number of calls. That's one way to do it. I think that's a useful number. Median is also a very useful number. There's three, remember in averages, there's three numbers. There's the mean average, which is you take up all the data, divide it by the number of cases. That's the median average. The mode is the one that happens the most often. That's a completely useless number in this case. That's, you know, we had 15 calls this day that had a 20-minute response time and 10 at 19 minutes. I mean, it's just not a useful number. The median is actually a very interesting one. I think I said median before. Anyway, the mean is all of them divided by the cases. The median is the midpoint number. Which, by the way, this same issue when it comes to incomes. I don't mean to, you know, like stray from math to math subject, but when we talk about the, like, average income in an area, taking up all the income that everybody earns and dividing by the number of people is a terrible metric. A much better metric would be, what's the midpoint? As in, the same number of people above and the same number of people below. That's a much more interesting number because that is, where is the middle of the bell curve, so to speak? But because it's not a bell curve, right? That'd be more interesting. So I think that knowing the median response time, the mean response time, and I don't mind an outlier, like what was the longest response time in the day? But here's the trick. And I'll tell you, there's a real key to how this data ought to be reported. And I'll tell you about that in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to let you know about. I-10 and I-110 are looking good. Just got a call about a backup at the back gate of NAS Pensacola. So just be aware of that. We'll get you more information on that in just a minute. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. So back to the reporting on EMS, because you can't know if you're doing better if you don't know what you're doing right now. I mean, that's the basic gist of it, right, is that you have no idea whether you're hitting the mark, missing the mark, by how much. And here's my suggestion, okay? For EMS to reestablish credibility with this community and so that we can know whether we are or are not making progress or are or not at appropriate staffing, instead of celebrating we're buying this truck, we're hiring these people, that's not really the right metric. The right metric is response time. So response time can be the midpoint, the median, the mean, the numerical average, and then the outlier highest response time per day, and this is the key, by call acuity level. And I know that's a lot of data to be reporting. That's the right data set. Because if on a given day you have, let's say, a 35-minute average, like a median response time, okay, that's bad. But if all the calls that day were A's and B's, which they're not ever going to be on a day, but let's imagine, okay, 35-minute response time for, you know, a voluminous number of A's and B's, not such a big deal. But 35-minute response time for D's and E's, oh, that's bad. Is really, really bad. You know, what you should be able to look at, again, layman speaking, I don't know anything about EMS other than what I've learned over the years. I'm certainly no personal experience, but it seems like you ought to be able to look at the D and E calls, and you can group them together, A's and B's, C's and D's and E's. I don't know what's going to make the most sense here, but, you know, D's and E's are taking 8 minutes or 12 minutes. Okay. A's and B's are taking 35 minutes. I can live with that. That sounds okay to me. And we ought to be able to say, okay, in January, this is what our average was. And in February, we reduced it by 2 minutes. You're making progress. How else will we know? Also, how else will we know whether we have the right number of staff and the right number of vehicles on the road?
Do you need to more properly staff you need to budget for more people You need, from what I'm hearing, at least 8 more in the daytime and 6 more on the nighttime crew. You can say you're fully staffed, but that's only fully staffed from what you guys have in your budget. That's deceptive. So until we have an acceptable national norm response time, that's what I'm asking you. But good job on this. I know I'm always saying the bad things. Thank you very much for doing
this.
Thank
you. It's
100% correct. The typical answer from EMS, and not just EMS, but in other ways as well, is when we ask them if they're fully staffed, their answer is, well, and I'm not trying to really criticize the people. You know, I know many of them, and they do their best, okay? We've had a lot of turmoil at EMS over the years. But the answer has always been phrased in terms of, well, we've got it's 120 positions budgeted, and we've got 118 people on staff, so we're pretty close to full employment. Well, if your response time is 35 minutes for Delta calls, it's not 100%. You're way understaffed. And that's the wrong number to look at. So really, staffing, fullness or not, needs to be a byproduct of response time. And what should the number of staff be in order to accomplish the response time that we're really trying? Because we're talking about people's lives here. We're talking about public safety, one of the key core functions of the government. And so I appreciate Jacqueline for making these comments and raising these questions. I'm just adding a little bit of my own kind of what I would like to see on this subject. Ashley Hoffberger, who, of course, ran on this issue. I mean, she ran on two issues. EMS response time because her own child, they couldn't get an answer on when a paramedic was going to come. And also reducing the time it takes businesses to get stuff done, regulation, permitting, all of that. Those are her two key issues. But she says...
Hoffberger, you have a comment?
Yeah, that was the main reason that I ran. We are tracking those times now. That is an upgrade that Chris Watts has put into place. Or Chief Watts.
Chief Watts, good. I haven't looked at one of these reports in a month or two because I kind of gave up bothering to look at them because they weren't that useful to me. But if that's true, then that's great. Okay, if they're already doing this to some degree, that's great.
I also think it's important that we highlight the fact that the most important thing is getting the patient to the help that they need, not the fact that the county makes money off of that.
Correct.
So thank you for seeing that.
100% correct. Absolutely. 621 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Have you given your auto loan a second thought lately? Just like you might refinance a home for a better deal, you can do the same with your auto loan. Refinance an existing loan from another institution with PennAir Credit Union and lower your interest rate by up to 2%. Plus, you can skip payments for the first 90 days. Take your old auto loan off of autopilot with PennAir to lower your interest and payments. Learn more at PennAir.org/auto-refi. That's PennAir.org/auto-refi. All loans are subject to approval. Offer valid on loan applications submitted between November 1st and December 31st, 2024 only. Call toll-free 1-877-4-PENNAIR for complete details.
Hey folks, this is Jimmy Patronis, Florida's Chief Financial Officer, wishing each of you a Merry Christmas. Now, I just received an amazing phone call a few weeks ago that I want to tell you about. President Trump called me and said, Jimmy, I want you to run for Congress. Wow. Yes, the guy who just won a landslide victory defeating the crazy Democrats in Washington, the guy who just got shot, stood back up and said, fight, fight, fight. That guy. President Donald J. Trump told me to run for Congress. Well, my mama didn't raise a dummy, so my response to the president was a very simple, yes, sir. I will run, and we will enact President Trump's agenda. We will secure the border. We will get rid of the woke foolishness in Washington. It's an honor of a lifetime to have President Trump's endorsement. The president can count on me, and so can you. I'm Jimmy Patronis, candidate for Congress, and I approve this message. I'd be honored to have your support. Paid for by Friends of Jimmy Patronis, Inc.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
The Pensacola Expert Panel. Pep Talk. Mornings at 9, right after Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Started up on his 6 when he pulled through the clouds, and then I moved in above him.
Well, if you were directly above him, how could you see him?
Because I was inverted.
before on the air that one of the things I've been doing over the last, couple of years really is I realize that I have bands who I have a couple of albums by them. Yes, I own albums. I'm old enough. Anyway, and I love these albums, but I either stopped buying music, you know, mid-90s, got more into Christian music and reasons, and didn't own the ones before that because I was too young, and then realized that, oh, well, they had three albums before that, or they had five albums after that, and maybe I would like those. And so I'm going back and trying to relearn all of this different music that I've never experienced before, and some of it is terrible. Aerosmith made a first album. You know, a lot of times a band makes a first album and it's fantastic, like Van Halen 1. A lot of time, or you know, Cars debut album. Like, and a lot of times a band makes a first album and you wonder how they got a second one, Aerosmith. tell me I'm wrong. But it, like, I've been listening to all of this new, that's new to me, even though it's not new. And so Nine Inch Nails was a band that I loved in college. And then I'm like, oh, there's like seven more albums by him. All right, I'm there. 625 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. And if you didn't put your hands up, you know, back of hand to back of hand, like because I was inverted at that one moment in that clip, you need to work on that. John Pickens got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right.
Because you did it too.
I was doing
the
hand.
We both did it. That's right. I know. Because I was... inverted.
That's right. No accidents to let you know about, but we're still seeing some backup at the back gate of NAS. So just be aware of that. That was due to an earlier accident, which has been cleared. I-10, I-110 are actually flowing smoothly. I'm John Biggins with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. Somebody says, I just heard a Jimmy Patronus advertisement. Is it true that he does not live in this area and is not from here? Yes. But there's an asterisk to that, okay? The first is that the law, actually, it's weird, doesn't even require you to live in district. Like, the Constitution just requires you to live in the state. Somebody from Miami could run for CD1 if they wanted to, oddly. Two, he is moving here. I've been told Perdido. He's got a home in Perdido, a family home there. And three, he does live close. It's like 13 miles or something. His, like, regular family residence is pretty close. So it's not like he's not from the Panhandle. He is definitely a Panhandle boy. So, yeah. And this, by the way, this is my opinion. The biggest argument that all of the big gaggle of other people that are running for this particular seat are going to try to use against him is, you know, he's not from here. It's kind of hard to make the carpetbagger claim against Jimmy Patronus. I mean, it's just, you know... super qualified CFO, definitely a Southern boy, you know, and just from a little bit outside the district. Is that going to hurt him in the election? Who knows? Who knows? But yes, it's really the only thing, not the only thing, but it's the main thing that all of your folks who do happen to live in district are going to say about him is, you know, well, he's not really from here. And, you know, I mean, people will decide whether that matters to them or not. 437-1620. I don't consider it disqualifying. I kind of wish it were not true. I mean, I'd rather have somebody who lives in district. But, of course, you have to ask the question, who's going to best represent our interests? Who's going to get the most done for us? Who's going to be the best legislator? A lot of times people run for, like, county commission offices and don't live in the district until if they, you know, if they win the election, then they have to move. Also, not a disqualifier to me. I'd rather find the best person. Of course, people who do live in the district often make a big deal out of that. And, you know, you have to decide as a voter. Does the fact that they don't happen to live in a particular geographic boundary mean all the world to me or not? And, you know, I'm just saying for me, it's not a disqualifier. It's a factor. And then I just have to decide how much of a factor it really is. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, at least four people have died after severe storms over the weekend. More than 30 tornadoes were reported in Arkansas, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, and Texas. Outbreaks of norovirus have now been reported nationwide. The CDC reported twice the amount of cases compared to past years. Norovirus, known widely as the stomach flu. The week of December 5th, the CDC reported just over 90 cases. That's more than double the highest number between 2021 and 2024. And January 9th has been declared a national day of mourning in honor of former President Carter, former ambassador to the UN, Andrew Young, talking about Carter's impact.
He never claimed to be perfect, but he always claimed to be obedient to the still small voice of God speaking within his soul and guiding him in the leadership of this nation.
And President Biden again making the declaration for a National Day of Mourning for January 9th yesterday. That'll be observed for 30 days, including on Inauguration Day.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Oh, somebody texted in 437-1620. When are you running, Andrew? You should consider it. No.
I keep telling you that over and over. Let you see how he listens to me.
There's lots of reasons why, mostly because I think I'm unelectable. Also, just, I don't know, the fundraising thing would drive me crazy. I'm really happy doing what I'm doing right now. And I don't know, it's nice not having to beg people for money. That's something you pretty much do as an elected official all the time. Also, I don't know, I'm really good at analysis and maybe entertainment. Decision making is not my favorite thing. That's what you wouldn't want me as an executive, like, you know, governor or president. Oh, God, I'd be terrible at that.
Fox News, I'm Paul Stevens. The nation mourns a former president.
Jimmy Carter stands as a model of what it means to live a life of meaning and purpose, life of principle, faith, and humility.
President Biden on the death of Jimmy Carter at the age of 100. Republican Senator Chuck Grassley.
Adjectives like compassionate, simple decency, humanitarianism. I remember, I think he restored decency to the White House after Nixon's resignation.
State funeral held for Mr. Carter coming up on January 9th. That'll be a national day of mourning. The former president also expected to lie in state before that in the Capitol Rotunda. Four people dead from tornadoes in Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi over the weekend. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It is 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 51 degrees and clear skies this morning in Pensacola. One person had to be airlifted to a hospital after a large gas station brawl in Loxley last night. Police say that fight broke out at a Circle K station on North Hickory about 6 o'clock Sunday night. At least five people were reportedly involved. One person seriously hurt when another person hit them on the head with a pipe. Right now, there's no word on that person's condition. A Santa Rosa County ninth grader will have artwork hanging in the state capitol in Tallahassee. It's artwork that Lila Wise submitted last year when she was in eighth grade for the statewide middle school Art in the Capitol competition. Her former art teacher submitted this statement at a recent school board meeting.
Lila is the only student I can remember in 36 years of teaching art that can actually visualize and draw with accuracy what she wants without any sort of reference.
And again, that statement from Gulf Breeze Middle School art teacher Rachel Southworth, who was not in attendance at that meeting. Lila was recognized earlier this month. She said the work was done in colored pencil with a prompt from a book. The school board said they were very proud of Lila and of her abilities. A 40-foot sperm whale washed ashore in Fort Morgan over the weekend. The massive whale was found Sunday morning. Alabama officials say it's now been removed from the beach. Tests are being done to determine its cause of death. The animal will be buried on the beach soon. Its estimated weight is around 30,000 pounds. A dog taken from a home in Alabama nearly a year ago now has been found. The search for Rags began in 2023, December of 2023, when a person walked into a home in Silver Hill, snatched the dog. Rags' owner confirms the dog was recently found almost 2,000 miles away in Arizona. The investigation continues. Suspects in multiple states have now been identified. Well, vote by mail ballots for the 2025 special primary election on January 28th are now in the mail. The 2025 special primary election is for Republican voters only. To check the status of your voter record, you can visit EscambiaVotes.gov. The deadline to request a vote by mail ballot for the 2025 special primary election is Thursday, January 16th. Escambia County Commissioners looking for applicants that would like to serve on the Escambia Children's Trust Board. Currently, there's one seat on the 10-member board that's vacant. Four members do have terms set to expire at the end of the year. To be considered for an appointment, you'd need to submit the completed Escambia Children's Trust application and questionnaire for gubernatorial appointments. All forms are due by 5 p.m. on Thursday, January 9th. 635 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. Brought to you by PureTalk.com. It's time to ditch big wireless. PureTalk gives you unlimited talk, text, and data for just $25 a month on their 5G network. No accidents to report to you right now. It looks like I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. Not seeing any delays on 98 or Highway 90, so good news on that. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
And 635 at News Radio, let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast.
We are going to be seeing a beautiful day today with temperatures warming up into the upper 60s for highs, plenty of sunshine. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 59 degrees. Keeping the sunny weather around on that Tuesday, high near 72. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 45 degrees. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. Right now, we've got 51 degrees in Pensacola, 53 in Gulf Breeze, 44, the cool spot in Milton. Our next news at 7, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Treasury yields were slightly lower this morning as the final trading days of the year are underway. The yield on the 10-year Treasury was down by more than one basis point to 4.6031%, trading just below multi-month highs recorded last week. Two family films dominated the holiday box office this week. Paramount's Sonic the Hedgehog 3 earned $38 million, while Mufasa brought in $37.1 million, according to studio estimates. And more from the entertainment sector. It's official. Wicked has pulled ahead of Mamma Mia to become the top-grossing film based on a Broadway musical. Wicked has grossed just over $634 million worldwide since it opened late last month. Mamma Mia grossed just over $611 million worldwide following its 2008 release. Futures are slightly lower. Friday, the Dow Industrials lost 107, the Nasdaq down 49, the S&P 500 down 15. That's Your Money Now.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
Izervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Izervay or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
Hey, it's Sandy Zerm. I'm a marketing consultant with ADX Communications, and I want to wish you all a very happy new year and a prosperous 2025.
This is Jeremy, the tribal director here at ADX Communications, wishing you all a happy new year, and go Buckeyes!
Hi, this is Morgan. I'm a promotion assistant wishing you a very happy new year.
Happy New Year!
News Radio 92.3 remembers Jimmy Carter.
I think we have a nation that is truly great, not that used to be great or someday will be great again, but one that has an innate character about it that's not adequately recognized.
Jimmy Carter served one term as our 35th president, but since he left office in 1980, he set the gold standard of what a past president of the United States could accomplish. He was a man who used his faith to try to do the right thing, even though it may have cost him politically. Steve Taylor, News Radio 92.3.
Yeah.
If someone would have told me 3 years ago that I would have to sue my county that I've lived in my entire life, I'd have said, there's no way I'd ever sue my county. They're going to follow the law just like everybody else does. This is not going to happen. And I can't believe what we've been through. The planning board unanimously approved this. We came here, and it got declined, and we sued.
So this is Mark Taylor. This is the Escambia County Commission meeting, and this is a really interesting case. This has to do with Motley Court, and if you don't know the geography, it's actually very important to know the location on this one. This is 10 Mile Road just west of the University of West Florida. It's actually, if you know that area, there's like a road called Pate Street that goes at like a, not quite a 45, but pretty close to a 45-degree angle, and cuts a big old line right through the back of their, like the west side of UWF, but between basically the trails and the forest there and the subdivision on the north side of 10 Mile. What's the only reason I mention all that is because this subdivision is a one entrance only subdivision. And I don't know the exact number of houses. I didn't count it specifically, but I did a little bit of math, and I'm thinking it's 350 to 400. Like, it's a lot of homes. One way in, one way out onto 10 Mile Road, and 10 Mile Road with no light or anything. Like, just, you know, good luck, you know. And what's happening here is that the property back there, and I think it's the, it's right next to the Calvary Chapel property, I think, and they're wanting to raise the density from low density residential, which is 4 units per acre on about 7 acres, so 28 you could develop in there, something like that, 29, to medium density residential, which is about 10 an acre, which, you know, max based on the math would be like 70. But he says, the developer, who you heard there, Mark Taylor, says, based on lot sizes and other factors, we're not really going to be increasing it by that much. It's only about 11 or 12 lots.
Guys, we're talking about 10 or 11 lots. About 29 lots can go on this property the way it's set up right now. At best, 41 lots will go on this property. If all the storm water and everything lines up perfect, if the stars align, we might be adding 12 lots, 11 or 12 lots. Best case scenario, please do what's right. Let's get this over with.
Okay. And again, he, you know, planning had said yes. County Commission, particularly Stephen Berry, had said no, sent it back. And then there's been a lawsuit. It's been a couple of years. And the shortest version of this that I can give you is, again, I'm not a resident of this area, but based on listening to the people who show up and complain, is they just don't want more cars on this road to the subdivision, which it's at the front of the subdivision, which is a little bit less of an impact, really, than if it were up the back, so to speak, because it's traveling all the way through everything. But in any case, it's going to be another, you know, 30, 40, 50 cars a day on top of, you know, however many hundreds of cars are already leaving and going in on the base of that. And so that's really the issue, is traffic. Okay, that's the main issue. The problem is they've satisfied all of the criteria that are necessary, they say, in order to get this approval. And so it's a question of the locals, and like my own, again, layman sense of this is, it's bad to put any more density inside the subdivision, but he can develop to the certain level, 29. He's trying to get the ability to develop to the 41. That's the issue here. Lisa Minshew is his attorney.
He's had to go to circuit court. He's had a judge direct this commission to do the right thing, to not take more evidence at this hearing, to only base your decision on the record from the planning board. Nothing personal, Mr. Berry, but I'm pointing out to the new commissioners that the circuit court said that new evidence that was introduced by Mr. Berry himself was inappropriate, that you shouldn't be looking at your own personal history of the property.
And that is what happened. When it came before the board the last time, Stephen Berry said, I don't think so. I don't think that it fits. I don't think that it's good to have the volume. I don't remember all the particulars he said, but I thought, actually, he was right. I agreed with him. I thought this was a bad upzoning. It was the kind of thing that I, not following any particular rules, just looking at the situation and the people complaining about it, it seemed to me like it was a bad upzoning because of the traffic in particular and, you know, the character of the neighborhood. The problem is that that was a violation of the rules. He was adding his own personal input to this without a chance for the other side to respond. And basically, they went and sued, and Judge Fedorovich says, you can't do that. No good. Stop talking. Stop adding evidence. There's all these rules about how these cases work, and this has not been done the appropriate way.
It wasn't so much that case. It was that the planning board members took offense that your board had somehow suggested that they had not done a complete and full review of this application the first time. And they felt like they had done that, and they didn't want to go back and do it again.
Well, you were the first person to tell them what a good job they did. And then a couple of them did speak up and say, yeah, you know, I guess we did do a good job. But, I mean, you were the one that originally said they did a very good job.
I'm not sure why I'm having a legal discussion with you, Commissioner, but I do think they did a good job.
Okay. It's the verbatim minutes from the meeting that precedes this. It's not a legal discussion. I mean, these are your statements that were made.
Yeah, so we're starting to get a little snippy here. Stephen Barry is very upset that people would be implying that he did anything inappropriate.
Commissioner Barry, but you know, in the last meeting, I asked you to recuse yourself because you seem to have personal, unusual bias against Mr. Taylor and his project, and you never did address that last time. You just
ignored it. Well, I'm not going to recuse myself. I have a responsibility to represent my constituents, which I'm going to do. I have no conflict in the neighborhood. I have no conflict with Mr. Taylor. I've never had a crossword with him before.
But you will follow the law, right?
Well, and I'm not sure that I agree with exactly what you said that the judge said.
Yeah, but then they read some of it, and she's got it right, and he's got it wrong. And there's more. We'll get to the more here in just a second. But again, let me clarify. I actually agree with him. Like, if I were in charge of making this decision, I would have voted no. I would agree with him. The problem is there are all these rules, and you have to follow these rules, and if you don't follow the rules just the right way, then you can't say no. When it comes to zoning and density, and that's what didn't happen this time around. So in spirit, I'm actually with him. On the law, I think he's wrong, and he's getting kind of snippy with the attorney for pointing it out. And we'll, like I said, more to this in just a second. John Pickens got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now, but if you're at the intersection of East 9 Mile Road and Highway 29 going northbound, you're going to see some delays there, about a five-minute delay. Other than that, traffic is flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Sean. So throughout this, Allison Rogers County Attorney, what should we do? What should we do? And she keeps saying, well, I can't tell you what to do. I'm not a commissioner. Just like Judge Fedorovich can't tell you what to do. She's a judge. And, you know, Lisa Minshew says she's trying to get you to stop doing what you keep doing wrong. Listen to your attorney for once.
Commissioner, you've been accusing me of not telling everybody everything. This board has the order, and the order is long. And in that discussion, not the final paragraph, it talks specifically about the errors committed by Commissioner Barry and why his interjection into that discussion was wrong. And that's why you can't do that at your level.
And Allison Rogers kind of agrees.
Judge Fedorovich's order makes it very clear that you should disregard the comments that Commissioner Barry made during the BCC's first consideration of this matter, that you should not consider that this evening as part of your decision making. You have before you a record from the planning board.
And that may very well be true. Her reason for that is that they were not given the opportunity to rebut my comments.
I
just want to be clear. No one is referencing that I did anything inappropriate by my comments. If they were not given
absolutely.
The process to rebut, I was not aware of that. I was not made aware of that at the time. That's my mistake.
I was not made aware of that by the time. That's criticism of Allison for not stepping in and saying, now that you said your say, we've got to let them have a response period, which was the key issue at stake.
I am discouraging that. You've already sent it back once. They've sent it
back.
But
we sent one earlier back, and we sent it again.
They're considering sending it back to the planning board again to get another, basically, recommendation.
What I don't want is I don't want you all to be accused of trying to sidestep Judge Fredrichovich's order by continuing to boomerang.
So is her order for us to approve it? I mean, I'm not going to sidestep any judge. I mean, if the judge is saying approve it, I mean, it's approved.
Neither the judge nor I can tell you that you have to approve it, but if you're going to do something else, you're going to need to find the competent substantial evidence in the record to support that other conclusion.
And the point is, there is not justification in the record to be able to say that. All you've got is this sort of personal assessment of it that Stephen Barry gave, that I'm also giving, that I think kind of the wrong outcome is being had. But, you know, you've got to follow the rules. That's the whole issue. And you can't just keep saying, well, we just don't like this recommendation. We don't like these rules. We can't use, you know, sort of personal opinion to stop this. Or if we did, we had to follow the rules of giving them a chance to respond, which they did not.
Mr. Hoffberger.
So my concern here is that we have Horace and Andrew that run an entire department. We have people that we have put on the board to help decide these things, and we can't sit up here and continuously overturn those. I get you sending yours back because you had a very specific concern, and it was more like, solve this problem and come back to me. So I understand that. This is the third time around, and we've already been to court. So as someone who doesn't believe in going to court and taking the recommendation of an attorney, I think we need to make a decision.
And she's right about that. And Mike Kohler kind of hems and haws and says, look, you know, I don't want to go against you, Stephen Barry, in your own district about something that you clearly care about. But the order seems pretty clear about what we have to do here. And Lumen May says,
But if legal is telling us, and, you know, I mean, we had a, you know, obviously there were situations previous with other board members where advice of the legal department wasn't taken and ended up in the loss of, you know, lawsuits. And so I don't.
Well, Commissioner May,
regrettable,
do we have
that
a motion to move this forward? Because we still have quite a bit going on tonight.
Yeah, it's regrettable that there wasn't advice given that evening that said, in light of your comments, Commissioner, we should allow the plaintiff counsel to rebut your comments. Because I think that could have avoided what appears to be the substance of the order. But that didn't happen, so.
Yeah, and again, blaming the attorney for not telling them what, you know, he really thinks needed to be said at that time. And so they're just kind of working their way through to figuring out what to do here.
Mr. Barry, if you feel there's some tool to go back, I mean, the planning board, I will, but I think we should move forward. Unless you really feel passionate to go down this route again, I think we should approve it.
Yeah. I have pushed and prodded and pulled and poked, and I don't know what that tool is, Mike.
Okay. Well, and Commissioner Barry, and I don't want to end up, I mean, I'm sick of the litigation and the cost to citizens.
You hear the applause for that.
On things that we don't have to litigate, you know. And
from preach, Commissioner May, preach.
In the spirit of staying out of litigation.
I know you want to go to a Black Baptist church, but you know, if you want me to, anytime after 8 o'clock, I'm going to preach all night. I love revival.
Yeah. In the spirit of staying out of litigation, I make a motion that we move forward with the recommendation of the board.
Okay.
I second it.
Okay. Please vote. Okay. Motion passes 4-1 with Steve Barry voting no.
And you could hear, I mean, you know, as Lumen has said many times, we're 0 for the season. We keep losing these lawsuits. We keep going against the recommendation of our attorneys. You know, for all the various things. Now, it's a new board without Jeff Bergosh on it, so things might be a little bit different now. But same basic problem is, you know what you have to do. You know what the judge has said. You know what your attorney is saying. You know what the law requires, even though it's not the decision you would like. And this is, again, I'm actually in solidarity with Stephen Barry on this one. I don't think it makes sense to upzone this property. It's already beleaguered by lots of problems, that neighborhood in particular, traffic. But do you have a leg to stand on? Did you do it right the first time? Answer, no, no. And so you have to do what you have to do. And sometimes the adult decision is you just got to swallow the pill, which he did not do, 4-1 vote, right? But they did move forward with it, so it's going to get the upzoning, and we're going to see how many, you know, parcels he develops. And, you know, in the end, probably what will happen is people will grumble and complain, and then it'll be 50 more cars a day, and so be it. You know, you'll adjust, or they'll change the intersection or something. And, you know, 10 years from now, nobody will remember that there was a big argument about all of this. 437-1620, 437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Northwest Florida businesses pay an average 20% more for phone service. Data Revolution wants to change that. We are your local, service-focused VoIP provider. Right now, offering a free bill review and free installation for new customers. No matter where your team is, Data Revolution can help. Experience the service and support only a locally owned company can provide. Join the revolution at datarevs.com.
Hi, my name is Michael Dylan Thompson, candidate for Congress here in my home district. I'm proud to be the only candidate who voters petitioned to be on the ballot. Every other candidate paid over $10,000 to qualify, often using either lobbyist or special interest money. As a born and raised Pensacola native, I will fight for my district. I will fix the insurance crisis created by establishment politicians, and I will protect our brave service members who keep America free. We don't need outsiders bringing Washington, D.C. corruption into Northwest Florida. We need new ideas and fresh leadership to fight for us. As your congressman, I pledge to always put Florida first. There's a critical election on January 28th, and I need your vote. This is our chance to take back our voice and send a clear message to the career politicians. We won't let special interests decide our future. Together, we can restore accountability, protect our values, and secure a stronger future for Northwest Florida. I'm Michael Dylan Thompson, and I'm proud to approve this message. Paid for by Michael Dylan Thompson, Republican for Congress, District 1.
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions. Tune in Thursday at 10 a.m. and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
When you listen to News Radio 92.3 on Saturdays, you get the Garden Line Encore at 9. At Home with Gary Sullivan at 10. Swan Capital at 1. Let's Go Pensacola at 4.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Morning, 6:55 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Let's see. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
I was singing the song.
Were you busy with the cutting crew?
Yeah. I mean, okay, anyway. Sorry. no accidents to report right now. I-10, I-110 are looking good. If you're approaching, let's see here, 9 Mile and Highway 29, both north and southbound, you're going to see just some minor delays, maybe like 5 minutes, just due to congestion. Other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, at least four people have died after severe storms across the South over the weekend. There were more than 30 tornadoes reported over the weekend in Arkansas, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, and Texas. It's still not clear what caused that deadly plane crash in South Korea on Sunday. It could take weeks to get the data from the plane's black boxes. The flight from Bangkok was carrying 181 people. It skidded off the runway and crashed into a barrier, then burst into flames. Two people were rescued. 179 were killed.
You know why you're having trouble talking this morning?
It's that poisoned popcorn you gave me.
No, it's the tie.
That could be it. It could be either one.
David Wayne has put on a new look over the last couple of days. First, he went to, you know, collared shirt. Now he's gone to a tie.
Had to do
tux
this.
Tux next week.
Had to do this incrementally, you know. I didn't want to put people into shock.
Yeah, right.
The new session of Congress starts later this week. Both chambers will be in session for the first time in the new year. Swearing in of the 119th Congress is set for January 3rd.
All right, David, now you give it to me, and now my throat.
It's
of course, I've been sick for 2 weeks, so
glass.
It's okay. David, thanks so much for the update. 657 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, somebody texted, this is important to remind. The project, the upzoning we're just talking about, Motley Court, is only going to be like 10 to 12 homes. He's allowed to add, what was the number? 29, I think. And he wants to grow, he wants to upzone it to 41. So there's already going to be so many cars added, lawful under the current zoning. And he wants to increase it enough to get an additional, like, 20 cars, basically. So I think the residents would have been unhappy with an addition of one house, you know? But, of course, and it's their right to complain about quality of life, and these are real concerns. You know, would it have made a significant harm to quality of life? I don't know that I can say. I understand why the opposition came. But it's also one of those things where, you know, in the grand scheme of the size of the neighborhood already, which is at capacity, that's, I think, part of why they're complaining about it. And again, that's the nature of things. If I, you know, I live in a one in, one out road subdivision, and if somebody wanted to put, you know, 20 or 40 homes on the front end of our subdivision, I'd be furious about it too and try everything I could to stop it, because that's going to affect everybody's quality of life. 437-1620, 437-1620. Oh, I have a couple of announcements worth making. Mardi Gras Mambo, presented by the Ice Flyers, featuring Lil Jon and Young Jock. I always want to put, like, some French pronunciation on that. Young Jock. Coming up on January the 11th at the Pensacola Bay Center. Good event. Pay attention to that coming up soon. Also, the Pensacola Symphony Orchestra is going to be ringing the new year with vocalist Sidney McSweeney and vocalist and trumpeter Byron Stripling. As they join the orchestra, get your tickets now, playing Gershwin, Irving Berlin, and other folks. PensacolaSymphony.com for more information. I'm Andrew McKay. We'll be back in just a moment.